You're listening to the world's smartest podcast network.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento. Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America, episode 301. My name's Turner Sparks.
I'm Sir Michael Ira Kaplan.
Ooh, for the Scottish, a little tip to what episode we're doing today. My name, you can find me at Turner Sparks on all social media platforms. I'm putting new stand-up comedy videos out all the time.
Nice.
So check that out. Go see my clips for free and then pay to come see me at a comedy club. Don't just watch a clip and be like, ha-ha, but never show up. I'm going to be in Detroit, Michigan. Next weekend, May 20th, I'm doing Drew Fralick's comedy club. There's new brand new comedy club in Detroit. So coming out to that May 19th and 20th. I don't know if the 19th might be sold out, but there's still two shows on the 20th. Come on out to that. You can find Kaplan on all social media platforms. Cap in America, Cap in NYC for his, his side job is
my side hustle is being the top real estate agent on the west side of Queens. So
yes, in Hunters Point South. Number one real estate agent. So check that out. Kaplan NYC. Kaplan, we got a big announcement. We're going to be talking in a minute to we're going to be talking about Scotland and Scottish independence with Vlad McTavish, a Scottish comedian based there. But before we get to that, Cap, we need to promote. So June 3rd, we have, as everyone knows who's listening, we started this new monthly series we do only for our Patreon subscribers that is called Off the Record. And it's a live talk, discussion, interview, but you join in. We do it on Zoom. We do it with the comedian. We get one of our comedian guests, and then we get you, and you can jump in and ask questions. We had Muhammad Magdi on last week. And the point of it is it's live only. We don't record it.
Right. So because they can say whatever they want.
They can say whatever they want because so many of our guests, our comedians, are in countries where they're not allowed to say what they want on the air into a microphone. So we do this once a month thing. It's completely uncensored. Muhammad Magdi told us all about his life in Egypt, how he got out during the Arab Spring, and all the details he could definitely not say into a microphone. So we did that last month, and it was fantastic. Everybody loved it. We had a ton of guests, Patreon subscribers join in. And next month, on June 3rd, we're doing our next one with Anton Timoshenko. He is a stand-up comedian in Kyiv, in Ukraine. And he's going to be telling all us about his life, including we've been doing podcasts with him for a couple of years now. And then what did we do? A month or two ago, we turned on Netflix. He's on there with David Letterman.
I mean, we discover stars in this podcast.
David Letterman stole our bit.
He stole our whole show.
He stole our show.
He went to the Ukraine to talk. Yeah,
he went to Ukraine. Bunker. He went to Ukraine. He met with Anton, and then they did stand-up comedy at Anton's club. I'm like, we're currently pitching that exact show to television networks all over the place. They said, no, we'll just steal it and do it with David Letterman. So anyway, Anton will be on. Maybe he can tell us what it was like to hang out with Letterman. June 3rd, the only way to get invited to that is go to patreon.com/lostinamerica. Throw in $5. $5 is all it takes, $5 a month, and you'll get a private Zoom link. Plus, you get all the other stuff we do. Our live Lost in the Bunker comedy show, everything. All right, Kaplan, now let's get to this episode.
Yeah.
Scottish independence is something. Yeah. Our first experience with it in America was William Wallace, right? It was Braveheart.
And they were just bashing into each other in a battle. And
they put on blue face paint and then they run around. And as far as, I've been doing research the last couple of days to learn about this episode. And I realized that I completely misunderstood the ending of Braveheart. Because at the end of Braveheart, he says they will never take our freedom, but he says it while they're killing him. So I thought that meant that's when they took his freedom.
Right.
I thought it meant that was in early 1300s, I believe. And that's when the evil British conquered Scotland. The evil English conquered Scotland was in 1300 because they took his freedom. Comes to find out, I do a little research. No, it was like 400 more years.
400. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was with. I did some research. I learned that it was because they had some debts. They basically they discovered some. So they went to like the one part of the New World where they couldn't make money.
Who's
that? The Scottish.
Okay.
And they had some debts, and they were they needed, you know, you need help. You need a creditor. They merged with England.
Wait, I read something about them taking Panama at some point.
Yeah, Panama. Panama was apparently a useless colony.
The Scottish took over Panama. That sounds like spring break gone wrong.
Yeah, pre-canal days, Panama.
That's a wild spring break. And then they had so much fun, they ran out of money. And then
they ran out of money. They needed money. England had money. They said, hey, let's you got a, you know, we got a king. You got a king.
And that wasn't until like 1770 maybe or something like that.
I don't know the year, but I didn't look that
1707. You didn't look up the year. We've been researching an entire podcast. You didn't look up the year. 1707. I found 1707 is when that happened. And then since then that was the forming of the UK. Scotland and England have been part of the UK. I mean, have been the UK.
Wales,
the
backbone, Northern Ireland. Yeah.
The backbone of the UK. And but then I think ever since then, very shortly thereafter, 1707, Scotland was like, we gotta get out of here. And it's just taking a while.
And it's always been curious to me because, you know, when you watch soccer, they have their own. Scotland's a team. It's not like, you know, there's no like UK team. You know, you watch.
Yeah. Olympics. So that's, right. Do they
Olympics
compete on their own?
And then I was in England. Last thing I'll say is I was in England in 1998. It's when I met your brother. And they passed. That was when everyone was talking about they had a new parliament coming. Like Scotland was going to have their own parliament. So I thought this was all solved then. I thought like they gave them freedom. They could choose a few things.
No,
they didn't solve it. And then in 2014, they had a referendum. If we're fast forward.
Well, so in 2014, because I remember this, it was in the news. They voted. They said, oh, Scotland's going to be able to vote to say if they want to be independent or not. And I'm fresh off Braveheart. And I'm going, well, of course they want to be independent.
Yeah, I've seen. Have they seen? Has Mel Gibson given them a pep talk?
And the vote was no. And I said, if these people not seen Braveheart, maybe they haven't seen it. That's the issue. So we're going to find out. But and now they want to be in. Now it's coming up again. Independent.
Well, the
so
Brexit, I think, has re-triggered it because Brexit happened. And that's we're going to get into it. But
oh, good point. All right. So joining us now, fantastic comedian from Scotland. He has been we've been watching his stand-up clips on BBC, different BBC TV shows. Hilarious, been a legend of the comedy scene in Scotland. He has a show for a very long time, has a show now called coming up at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. If you're going to the festival, go check it out. It's called The End of the Beginning of the End. Everybody welcome.
Great
Vlad name. McTavish, straight from Edinburgh.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Yeah. Yes, you've done a hell of a lot of research there, guys.
How did we do? How did we do on that? What did we get right? What did we get wrong?
Well, I think the one thing you failed to point out was that in Braveheart, William Wallace was strangely Australian.
That was the problem with the whole effort, the war effort, I think.
And then a lot of people were at the chance, why have they got an Australian? What's Mel Gibson doing? Pretend to be Scottish. And then Mel Gibson later on became an alcoholic.
So it's Mel Gibson's fault.
Method to its extreme. How Scottish do you want me to be?
He went full Scottish.
Yeah. And as you point out, yeah, Brexit has been a real... I mean, in 2014, when UK was still... part of the European Union, and one of the things we were told was that if we voted to leave the UK, we wouldn't be members of the European Union, and some people bought that. And of course, what happened is then the English voted, you know, because Scotland voted to stay in the EU in the UK referendum in 2016, and then we were dragged out of the EU against our will
because of Brexit.
You said, I mean, somebody was saying to me the other day that you really do notice the difference when you go to Europe. You suddenly realize. I mean, I think a lot of us over the last few years have been thinking how fucked the UK is, and we think, "Well, that's just us thinking that because we're here." And then you go abroad, And you think, God, yeah, it is actually fucked.
Yeah.
How so?
Stuff works, and there's supermarket shelves are stocked, and you go, God, yeah. Oh. And then going to Europe now, we've got to go in the third world. You know, we used to be able to just breeze
the visa,
the UK passport. Yeah. Now, and now we've got to queue up in the third world queue. And
third world queue.
Yeah, I mean,
you're with the Americans.
That's
and
what
the,
it's called, the third world queue.
Yeah, Americans, British, and third world.
Yeah, you could say we're becoming a banana republic, except we don't even produce bananas, and we're sadly not a republic as well, as we saw at the weekend.
Yeah, I saw that 62% of Scottish voted for Brexit. You mentioned so. I mean, voted again, to remain in Brexit. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
38% voted for it.
Mm.
So in 2014. I guess we'll start. Well, actually, yeah, we could start at 1997, I guess. So quickly, 1997, there was this, I guess at that point, there was a push to become Scotland to become its own country. And so it seems like what England did was give Scotland the right to have its own parliament and decide a few things on its own, but not everything on its own, but a few things on its own, thinking that that would kind of appease everybody and they would calm down. Mm-hmm. And that would be the end of that story.
Yeah, and it had the exact opposite effect. Mm-hmm. Having given us a bit of autonomy, people thought, "Well, actually, yeah, we can do things a hell of a lot better up here." And I mean, I'm not. It's difficult to go into this whole thing without making sweeping generalizations. But Scotland is, in general, a more socially inclusive nation in England. I mean, I think people are just more naturally left wing in Scotland. I think we have more of a sense of community. That doesn't go right across the board, but yeah, greed is not valued as much in this country as it is down south.
I wonder what that is, because
down south,
what it to an American audience listening right now, you could easily replace these two countries with Canada and the United States.
Yeah, Canada, I guess it's a very
south is more conservative in general.
Well, Canada is a smaller country than by a lot than the, I think there's 50 million
people wise. Yeah.
Yeah. And then with Scottish, there's 5.5 million Scottish and then 70 million, 60 million British, English. Yeah.
They both have oil. They both have a lot of oil up there.
It's something about, I don't know what that is about that dynamic, but if there's less people to deal with and I don't know, something about it makes it America. We're more all out for ourselves, and Canadians as a country seems to be a more inclusive, welcoming place.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny you should draw those similarities between Scotland and Canada, but there's huge cultural links too.
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of Canadians have Scottish roots, and that dates back to a period called the Highland Clearances, which happened not long after the Act of Union. And there was this system of farming in the Highlands of Scotland where it was called crofting, and we were all small holdings. Guys just lived off their own plot of land. They usually were by the sea. They'd fish, they'd till the soil, they'd have a couple of sheep. And then large landowners decided this wasn't a particularly economic form of agriculture as far as they were concerned. Mm. And they just decided to basically industrialize agriculture. Agriculture as we know it today. And they decided the most profitable thing for them was to just have sheep, no people.
Yeah.
And so these guys got handed off the land. They're houses were burnt down and they were put in boats and they were sent to Canada.
Interesting.
It was called the Highland Clearances. And it was basically ethnic cleansing. I think probably the bleakest period in Scottish history until probably 1966, which if there's any soccer fans watching
the World Cup, when England won the World Cup.
England won the World Cup.
That was the bleakest day. That was the second bleakest day. Ethnic cleansing won.
I was England wondering where we were going.
Or which one is one and which one's two, actually.
But yeah, at least
ethnic cleansing or England wins the World Cup.
Yeah. I think England winning the World Cup is much worse because The BBC didn't film the Highland Clunes.
Right. You didn't have to watch it over and over and over again. Yeah, tell
you. Every year.
So,
talking about the World Cup, yeah, but we were just talking about Scotland having a separate soccer team. And here's an example. Here's an example of, I think, this the different set of values we have in Scotland, is that I think it was actually disgraceful that Qatar was awarded the 2022 World Cup. You look at the human rights abuses that happened in that country. And I'm very proud of the fact that Scotland decided to boycott the 2022 World Cup.
Oh, wait, did they really boycott it or they just not qualify?
Well, they boycotted it by playing really badly against Ukraine. Which again just proves what a generous-hearted nation we are. We gave the Ukrainian people a much-needed morale boost in their darkest hour.
Sure, yeah, you let them take your spot.
Very, very kind of you.
We don't have that big of a heart in the United States.
The slaves of Qatar appreciated it.
So 1997, they let you guys have your own thing. And then I want to know more about what's the party? Sorry, I was trying to.
The SNP?
Oh, Scottish National Party.
National Party. So when we've been researching the last couple of days, it kind of seems like this is the party that is pushing towards the independence.
Yeah.
They're kind of leading the country towards
National it. Party.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, it is pro. There are a number of pro-independence parties, but the SNP is by far the biggest. There is a party called the Alapa Party, that is the Gaelic for Scotland, and the Green Party. The Green Party are in favour of Scottish independence as well. But yeah, the SNP. The SNP is a broadly leftist centre social democratic party that at the core of its policies is.
And Scottish. Did they get kind of, because I imagine in 1997, when you guys were allowed to have your own parliament and everything, was it just like this a flurry of people creating parties and coming up with parties, or were the parties already there? They just
SNP had existed for now my own history is kind of.
You can say a long time. We don't mind.
But they were part of the old UK Parliament, right?
Yeah, the SNP has existed since the 1930s.
Okay.
I think the first member of the UK Parliament was elected in 1967, something like that.
Yeah.
And they first gained a lot of support in the early 70s when oil was discovered off the North Sea. Off the coast of Scotland. And that was what gave the real impetus for it to become a much more popular party, because the idea that, Scotland should be rich in oil and kind of, propping up a right-wing government in England didn't receive. And in fact, I mean, what happened with a lot of the North Sea, I mean, if you look at the difference between Norway and Scotland, it's quite, because they both discovered oil in the same stretch of the North Sea between the two countries. And Norway's policy with oil has benefited the Norwegian people, whereas they actually set up an oil fund, which is now being used to finance renewable energy. And whereas Scotland's oil, basically all the exploration rights were just sold off by Margaret Thatcher in the late 70s to... bankroll privatizing public services.
Is that why, or is that one of the reasons why Scottish people hate Margaret Thatcher?
Absolutely.
She's so likable.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I think she's less popular in Scotland than she is in Argentina.
The Falkland Islands.
Yes. Okay. So that brings up a good topic. Let's get to it. So I guess we're jumping around here, but if Scotland is to become its own independent country, it seems like having oil is a good start.
Yeah.
As a base for economy. What are the other kind of natural resources, or what would be the backbone of the economy if it was to be its own country?
Renewables. Okay. Wind. I mean,
it's windy up there.
You guys have been to Scotland, but there's a hell of a lot of wind in this country. Mm-hmm. Tidal power. water. I won't go as far as saying solar power, because that is quite frankly ridiculous. And we also make a drink that's quite popular throughout the world.
What's that? Oh, whiskey. Well, you got golf.
Golf, yeah.
And what about ports? Are there ports there?
Ports, yeah.
Of course, for trade.
Yeah.
All right, sounds like you guys are fine.
Yeah, I mean,
and you would join the EU if you were your own country, right?
Well, so. We would, yeah. And the other thing, the big advantage we have is, I mean, okay, you might not agree with this, but we speak English.
That is sure.
Which gives, you know,
a version of that.
Yeah, it is a bizarre version, but we do speak a version of it.
That is an advantage. I mean, you would still trade a lot with England, I assume. The UK, you'd have to work that out.
Yeah. I mean, I've said for years that I think Scotland would have a more mature relationship with England if it was fully independent.
Because there wouldn't be the notion that England, like, there's this notion that England, like, subsidizes, right? Because
that's what they say. England claimed to subsidize Scotland, but actually the truth is it's the other way around. Hmm.
But how do you mean? Just because of the resources or the?
Yeah, because resources, the duties from oil exploration, et cetera, et cetera.
So to dive into that, actually, let's back up a little bit. So let's go to 2014. There was the vote. And at this point, was it David Cameron? Was he the
Cameron? Yeah, remember him. Yeah.
He was the prime minister.
A few prime ministers ago now. Yeah.
In England. And what I found along my research is that to be able to vote to be an independent country, David Cameron, the prime minister of England, had to grant you the right to have the vote. Which seems, why would he allow a vote if it's a bad move for England and for Britain as a whole?
Allowed a Brexit vote
to let Scotland to leave. Why would he allow a vote? Why would he even allow it to go to a vote?
I think the real reason behind that, Turner, is arrogance. I think he was utterly convinced that Scotland would overwhelmingly vote no to independence. And I think it was because at the time he granted the referendum, which was in 2012, that was when the actual, I can't remember what the act was called, but whatever the act was passed in the UK Parliament to give it a referendum. And that was in 2012. And support for independence at the time was about 25%.
Okay.
And by the time the referendum happened, support for independence was 45.
Right, they got 45% of the vote. Yeah. Independence.
Yeah, it ended up 55 wanted to stay in Britain, and 45 wanted to leave.
Was the vote along generational lines? Like, was it very much older people would be more scared about leaving?
Yeah, very much so. And I think people who had a generational lines, and I think along the lines of social class, or people with money voted more against independence.
I would imagine. So I read about it. It's obviously easier to do trade with a country if you're part of the same greater country.
Yeah.
So it will be, if you do have independence, it will be somewhat harder to do to business, whatever degree it'll be harder to do business with England. It might be a little bit harder. It might be a lot harder. You don't really know until it happens. So I would imagine that a business owner who does trade might want to vote to remain.
Or wealthy people who might have homes in both countries.
Yeah. Wealthy people who are sending money back and forth.
Yeah.
A lot of people with huge assets that they didn't want to lose.
So, in 2014, when that vote happened to remain as part of England, what did you feel? Did you feel that was the end of it?
The day after, yes, I did. I think a lot of us thought, all right, that's the chance we've had, and we've let it go. Mm-hmm. And it was said, I think it was never a pledge, by Alex Salmond, who was the First Minister at the time. But I think it was said as a throwaway comment in an interview that it was a once-in-a-generation event. And I think a lot of us thought that. And then suddenly, in the wake of, well, there were various, in the wake of various things, but I think in the wake of the whole independence movement, membership of the SNP just skyrocketed. And at the next UK election, which was the following year, the SNP won, I think, all bar three of the seats in Scotland.
So it's one of these things that did the vote happen galvanized. And then that just kind of awoke, people woke up.
Yeah.
I realized there was a possibility. It wasn't like,
Jesus, why did we do that? Yeah. A lot of people in the next day thought, God, we made a huge mistake. And I think actually, ironically, and this is the thing about politics in general, I think it's the one activity in life where losing makes you more popular than winning.
Sure.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah, yeah, whenever your party, it happens in the U.S. too. Whoever wins the presidency, it's like the other side wakes up and then you're going to lose the next midterm election, right? Mm-hmm. All of your senators on your side are probably going to lose. They always lose because the other side's now activated and the side that won is relaxed because they just won.
Yeah.
And so it flips back and forth. Yeah,
the side that won suddenly becomes the government and...
Yes, right. Nobody likes
the government. Yeah.
I was years ago. I was a member of the Labour Party when I lived in England for a while.
Okay,
and I was a member of the Labour Party, and I found my membership card years later, and I realised my membership had lapsed in 1997, which is when Tony Blair was elected. Thought,
New Labour.
I think part of me was, why would I want to be a part of the party that's the government?
Sure, of course.
Also, because that was in the early days of me doing stand-up, and I quite often get asked to do fundraising gigs for the Labour Party, and I always did them. And then after they won the election in 1997, I was still getting asked to do them, and I thought, I'm not doing a fucking fundraising gig for the government.
Yeah, it's the man all of a sudden. Like, they were out of power for, 17, 18 years, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so it was cool to support Labour.
I fundraise for the government every month. It's in my taxes.
Well, you don't do that.
Your taxes, yeah.
I wouldn't need to go above and beyond. So were you based in London doing comedy?
I was based in London, yeah.
Okay.
And you near?
Go ahead, Cap.
Oh, no, I was just going to ask, because it's interesting to us, at least to me. You're actually you get a card when you're like a member of a party, like the Labour Party. You have to pay dues, or do you have to? Because we don't have that in America. You just register to vote whichever party you want.
That's right. Because you're all registered to vote. Yeah.
Right.
Whereas the party membership here, it's tiny.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, nobody knows exactly, because actually the SNP are one of the few parties that actually say how many members they have. But for example, in September, when Liz Truss, remember her?
Yeah, she was in a show on her for like a week.
Before she was out.
Yeah, she did a lot in that time, though, didn't she?
She screwed us because we did a full episode on her and learning about her and her background. Her biography.
We wasted a lot of time.
By the time we put the episode out, she wasn't even in office anymore.
That's right. Yeah. A tabloid newspaper, because when it began, obviously it wasn't going to last very long, they actually found a lettuce in a supermarket.
And it lasted longer.
On the shelf longer than Liz Truss was. she tanked the economy. She brought the pound down to its lowest ever level, and killed the Queen.
She did it all. She accomplished all she wanted to accomplish, and she retired.
She retired.
Because it was quite amazing. The last time anyone saw the Queen, she was shaking hands with Liz Truss. 2 years later, she died.
If Liz Truss would have just come along 50 years ago,
But anyway, Liz Truss was elected because, when Johnson finally resigned, Liz Truss was elected by the Conservative Party membership. She wasn't elected by in a vote, you know, in an election.
Yes.
The Tories were in power, and so she was elected leader of the party by the party membership, which they were very coy about saying how many members they had. But it was something like 150,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Why would you not? Oh, you don't want to say because it's so small.
It shows you. Yeah. Exactly. They don't people realize how few people are actually deciding who the leader of the country
is. So most people are just unaffiliated. They don't have a party.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Kaplan, this is us. When we were, we're about to say roughly the same age. When we were young, it was cool in America to be independent.
Yeah. But
when I was in high school in the 90s, it was like you don't want to be part of a party. You don't. Who wants to be part of?
You hate the government. You hate
the, government.
Hate the man. Yeah.
Now it's that's very uncool. If you're not part of a party, you're part of the problem.
Right. If you're not in New York, in if you're not part of one party,
side. You have to be on a side, one side to the other side. You're like, well, can't
if
I?
If you're not super actively like, if you ever like kissing the ass of who's in charge, if it's the right party, then you're part of the problem. Yeah.
Yeah, you're part of the problem. But meanwhile, you're allowed to vote for whoever you want, no matter if you're in a party or not. You don't have to be in the party to vote in the United States. So there's no real point. We got to take a break, guys. But we'll be back. We're gonna do a quick break, Vlad, for our ad sponsor. But it'll be like. 1 second. Stay right there. We're part of the World's Smartest Podcast Network. That is us. That is the Majoring in Everything podcast with Dr. Andrea Jones Roy. And that is the Political Orphanage with Andrew Heaton. Check out all those podcasts at worldsmartestpodcastnetwork.com. And now, Captain.
Yes.
A word from your local sponsor.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
All right, we're back.
Thank you, sponsors.
Oh my gosh, love having them around.
That was a great. It's some really good products this episode.
What do you think about that product, Vlad? That we just went to.
Oh right, I missed that, but
it was good. It was a good one.
It'll save your life. Make sure to go back and listen. It's a key. It'll add 5 years to your life. So
good. Well, fine. Well, that's a bonus.
No matter what it is, it'll be great. So we
Viagra.
So then they vote to remain as part of the UK, and then Brexit happens. And so by the time Brexit happens, the Scottish Nationalist Party is already kind of gaining steam, right? Building momentum and everything. So then Brexit happens, and we read, I think 62% of Scottish people voted to remain as part of the EU, but you guys only have 5.5 million people.
That's right.
So your vote, it's not going to weigh as much as the other 60 million. Mm-hmm. Where's as an aside, where's Wales in all this?
They got to be small.
Where's Wales in all this? Yeah, a good question.
Have they ever voted? Do they want to leave? Or are they happy where they are?
They're happy.
Where Wales is, 1974.
That's where they are.
Wales,
they're just getting disco over
nobody
there.
Nobody talks about
that's
Wales.
That's right. Well, Wales is a stranger because Wales has been invaded by the English. I couldn't even tell you how long ago. So it's and there is a Welsh National Party called Plaid Cymru, which is the Welsh for don't know what. Probably Welsh Party, I would imagine. And they voted. I mean, they've never had. They've got their own parliament because when they devolve powers to Scotland, they also devolve powers to Wales. I think the Welsh Parliament has less powers than the Scottish Parliament. There's less of a movement for independence. Although, again, support for independence in Wales is growing, and I think that's partly because. Again, in reaction to having a Conservative government in Westminster, because again, people in Wales tend to be fairly left wing as well.
Okay.
And But having said that, Wales voted in the Brexit referendum. Wales voted to leave the EU.
Oh, so they were part. They wanted Brexit to happen. Yeah, I see. Yeah. So, I mean, I could see when, you know, when the sun, back in the old days, when the sun never set on the British Empire and there was countries around the world, part of Britain, it might have been attractive to be part of
Britain. You ran the world. You're part of running the, you're part of the winning team.
But right now, you guys are almost half of it at this point. You know, it's like, it's so small now that it doesn't make sense. So then 2016, so they vote to Brexit happens. And then at this point, does the movement crank up again?
That is, I mean, it was almost pretty, I can't remember exactly how soon afterwards that the Scottish government asked for a second referendum on independence.
And so now why, which gets to my main question, why since 2016 till now, it's been 7 years and we did have COVID in the middle of it, but why has it taken so long to get a vote?
Well, because successive UK governments keep refusing.
Why do they have to get permission? The Prime Minister has to.
When we had the last election to the Scottish Parliament, which was in 2021, and again, there was a majority elected who were, well, the SNP and the Greens both stood on with a policy of being in favour of another referendum. And then the Parliament voted in favour of it and the people voted in favour of it. And then again, the UK government refused to concede another referendum. And then the Scottish government took them to court. And somehow, I don't know why, the Supreme Court ruled that the UK government had the right to deny the Scottish government a referendum on independence,
and that's definitely
no. Yeah,
did they rule that it's indefinite? That, you know, always keep denying it, or is it was a reason because it's so close to the last one? Or
I don't think it was anything to do with the timing. I think it was to do with the fact that actually enshrined in the Act of Union somewhere it has to be said. The Supreme Court of the UK is the Supreme Court of the UK. So it's hardly likely.
Right. It's not non-biased.
Yeah.
How many Scottish members are there on that Supreme Court? Are there?
I don't know.
Yeah. Mm. You gotta pack the court.
Mm. Yeah.
So why does England, to flip the question, I understand why you guys want to leave. Why do they, what's their reasoning for wanting you to stay so bad?
Well, yeah, that's a really good question. And it's one that a lot of people think, well, yeah, why?
Yeah.
I think one of the main reasons is the fact that, that it's somewhere, Scotland is somewhere to keep their nuclear missiles.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's where the nukes are. And I guess, well, okay. So it's like the same reason we need New Mexico or whatever.
Exactly. I mean, they say there's various other reasons, but no, I think fundamentally it comes down to that.
Do you think also, I mean, I guess maybe oil? Does a lot of your oil go to them?
Oil and the fact, yeah.
And then pride, just basic pride.
Yeah, there's that as well. And secondly, I think it would just show the fact that I think if Scotland was to stand on its own 2 feet, which it undoubtedly would, it would make them look pretty stupid, the fact they'd be...
Yeah, and especially if you join the EU immediately.
Yeah. Exactly.
They would just be surrounded by the European Union.
Yeah, it's like when you break up with someone, they start dating your ex or something, or start dating.
And like then there'd be also no land border with Northern Ireland. I mean, there isn't really now; it's a water border, but still, there'd be no like natural connection to Northern Ireland. Mm. Crazy. What's it like performing? So, you started your career in England, I guess, right? Doing stand up. And then you get to go back to Scotland. What percentage of you, stand-up wise, what percentage of the time are you performing in Scotland versus England?
When I started?
Yeah.
When I started, almost exclusively, I'd be working in England. I'd go up to Scotland, do the odd gig.
Yeah.
And I'd do the Edinburgh Fringe. But no, most of my work was in London and that part of England, and well, just throughout UK wide. But actually, in the 90s when I started, there wasn't a particularly big stand-up scene in Scotland. Now it's incredibly good.
Okay, really?
Yeah.
And is the hub in Edinburgh for Scottish?
Edinburgh and Glasgow. Yeah, Glasgow's got a pretty lively scene as well.
And does it change for you being, because when you're in England, you're basically an outsider. Like you can view society as an outsider. Do you have that feeling or not? Yeah.
Well, to an extent, you do. Yeah. You always have to kind of point out the fact that you talk a bit different from them.
Yes. And which I imagine you don't have to do when you're in Scotland, you're not an outsider.
Yeah. And I think in Scotland also, I mean, believe it or not, at the moment, I'm kind of toning my accent down a bit.
Okay. You mean to talk to us?
To talk to you guys.
We were going to put a captioning on it.
On the audio.
The video.
Yeah. And that is the real, and also the cultural references are you have to change that. But then, to be honest, working in Edinburgh, because Edinburgh is such a tourist destination, 99 times out of 100, a large proportion of an Edinburgh audience will be tourists.
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of Americans, a lot of Europeans. In fact, there's the two main clubs in Edinburgh. One is the Stand, which is that was the first proper established comedy club in Edinburgh. It has more of a Scottish audience base, but it still gets loads of tourists at the weekend. And then the Monkey Barrel, which is very much in the historical part of Edinburgh, just off the Royal Mile. And almost all, their audience is about 90% tourists.
Wow. Okay. And you're talking about during the festival or just all the time?
Oh, yeah. Because we get tourists all year round. In fact, quite often, because it's really expensive to come to Edinburgh in August, hotels are really expensive. You know, during the festival in August.
Yeah.
Flights are expensive, hotels are expensive. You get lots of tourists come in September just because it's cheaper.
Okay. So the shows could even be better.
Yeah.
So what is there a sense to protect? Because there's only, I guess, 5.5 million Scottish people. And culturally, I don't know how else to ask this, but you had brought up in our notes the idea of intermarriage.
Well, like, I didn't know how much people at this point must intermingle. I mean, it's between Scotland and England. Yeah.
Well,
where there's not even as much nationalism, I would think, in younger people.
Yeah. But I think also Scots have traditionally traveled the world anyway. I mean, my own immediate family, my brother has been in England for 40 years and my sister is in France.
Okay.
So I'm the only one of my three, you know, and then my cousins, I have cousins in New Jersey. So.
Hey.
But is there pressure is that what you're getting at to marry Scottish? Well, Kaplan's
Jewish. There an idea within Judaism to marry other Jews?
Keep the tribe alive. Yeah, keep the tribe going.
To keep it alive? is there the same thing with Scottish people?
No, not really. We've got the highest, we've got the lowest life expectancy in Europe.
So you don't want to pass that down to people.
Yeah. Keep ourselves alive.
Hybrid. That's like with, it's good to mix things up. And
yep.
I would question what if they have independence, if you have independence, what would you go to the Euro? Is that the goal, you think, money-wise or?
Well, I would. Yeah. That seems to make absolute perfect sense. But something that successive, Scottish governments have been a bit. I think they think that keeping the pound is going to be more popular. Right? I don't guess. I think the euro is a great thing. I'm going on vacation on Saturday. My wife and myself are going to Mallorca.
Nice.
Mallorca's awesome.
Yeah,
I've been
beautiful. And 2 weeks ago, I was out doing shows in Berlin. And getting paid in cash. So I've got my spending cash for my vacation from a gig I did in Berlin.
Ah, that's genius.
And I love the fact you've just got this currency you can use in Ireland, you can use it in Germany, Spain,
right, France, Greece.
Yeah, phenomenal. And so why an independent Scotland wouldn't want to be part of the euro, I can't understand. But sure. I think that was one of the stumbling blocks in the 2014 campaign.
Yeah, because I was looking at the list, the propaganda list that the UK government put out of like the reasons to stay. And the number one thing they say is the strength of the pound. Like that's the stay with the pound.
Oh, yeah. Strong pound. there was a lot of scare stories that were just utter bollocks in that 24. Project Fear, they called it. It was the UK government's propaganda. Trying to get people to.
And it sounds like none of those would work again.
No. And in fact, to be honest, I think Cameron thought he could pull off the same trick again in 2016.
With Brexit.
With Brexit. He thought the same thing would happen. Ah. Yeah. So I was thinking that earlier when you said he was so arrogant. I thought,
yeah.
I bet that's why he was so confident in Brexit. He got it right once with the referendum idea.
Yeah, so we rolled out Project Fear again, and to be honest, I think Project Fear in 2016, a lot of the claims that were being made about the effects of leaving Europe were a lot more valid than the ones that we're making in 2014. And this is just the same lies that were given the people of Scotland 2 years ago. And
So it's didn't lie too many times.
What about, I was reading, and Kevin brought it up earlier, but the block grant that England, that's a big thing you hear about, is that England gives Scotland a certain amount of money every year. And the other side would say that that helps fund the Scottish economy. And without that money, it's like without that money, Scotland would run at a deficit of 8%, or maybe Scotland does run at a deficit.
Yeah, they said that. That's what we read.
I will hit you up on some of the language. England doesn't give Scotland any money.
Okay.
What grant comes from the UK government? And so where does the UK government get their money from? They get it from taxes and revenues, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
And what they're dishonest about is how much of that comes from Scotland.
Right. Yeah. Oil and other
things. The revenue in whiskey is huge.
Whiskey.
Yeah.
There's no whiskey in England, right? They don't have.
Well, this is what is about virtually none.
So if you guys get independent, you just got to tax the shit out of that whiskey.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Make them beg.
Well, also, the answer to that question is if someone from England or like the UK government, if the UK government says, well, if you left us, you would go broke. And then your response is, okay, fine, let us leave. And they go, no, you can't leave.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, you can't go. Yeah.
I think we found the answer.
Yeah, you're saying, and this is pretty much brings us back to what you were saying about 10 minutes ago. Why are they so worried about us leaving?
Yeah, if they think it would be so terrible for you and so great for them, why are they so worried about it?
Yeah, I mean, to draw a parallel with the US, I think everyone would probably agree that California could easily be an independent nation, couldn't it?
Yes.
I mean, it'd be a hellhole, but yes.
Yeah, but you know, it would be economically viable.
Definitely. You have ports, you have natural resources.
Yeah.
Wine.
Oh, yeah. It's an economy that's, I think, one of the 10th largest in the world on its own, right?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
As a country, if it was a country.
Yeah. But we would have to make the same campaign if California, we would have reasons to stay.
Well, I mean, I think the United States would just carpet bomb California.
That's the thing.
To hell. LA, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference, but the rest of the state, you would notice. You know,
we could do that.
The 405 freeway would look exactly the same. Yeah. But besides that, it wouldn't. So what about your name? So we said right before we got on air, I was asking if your name is Vlad or Vladimir McTavish. And you said, well, it's kind of neither.
Yeah. Ixnay on the Vlad May now. No,
it's a stage name. Yeah. When I first started doing comedy back in the 90s, a lot of people in those times had stage names. There was a marvelous comedian called Ian Cognito who sadly died a few years ago. His real name was Paul. Oh, God, I can't remember his real name.
But Incognito's a lot better than Paul.
His name is Paul. Andrew Springsteen, whose real name is Paul Ward. And I just, I don't know where Vladimir McTavish came from now. It was just cultural incongruity of having a Russian first name and a Scottish second name.
It just seemed, so that's not your real last name either.
Yeah, no, it's not. Oh, wow. And then, and let's say this was over 25, nearly 30 years ago, and it was got a snappy, catchy name, and people remembered it, and it was going okay until about a year ago. And
Vladimir.
Yeah, then all of a sudden,
March of last year.
You should change it to, what about this? What about Osama McTavish?
Yeah. Well, I'm certainly going back to my own name. But my old name is Andrew Tate. yes. Yeah. Only joking.
Yes.
Just tell everyone you're a big fan of the baseball player Vladimir Guerrero. Believe that.
I mean, you could go with Bill Cosby. I don't think that name is being used. He's not using it right now.
Yeah. It's been Adolf's been a while.
Adolf. Yeah. Bill Cosby too would be a good one.
Yeah, you don't get any Adolfs anymore, do you?
He was one of the most popular names. I saw a graph once. It was like the 1930s up to. It was like one of the most popular names in, I think, even America. And then it just went off a cliff. Real fast.
Well, isn't the name? I mean, Dolph Lundgren. Isn't he Adolf Lundgren?
Yeah, it is. That's why he's Dolph.
But you go by Dolph.
Drop that A.
Yeah. I go by Al, really, maybe.
Yeah, the guy who founded Adidas.
Was
Adolf?
He was an Adolf? He was also a Nazi, I think.
He was also a Nazi, so it checks out.
Yeah.
I think he might well have been.
He was, I believe. Yeah. I read. But, you know.
Well, I don't know if Run DMC knew that.
So don't go with Adidas as your stage name either.
You go Boss. That's what.
Yeah. So are you, comedy wise, are you building? I know that there's some comedians that do one, some comedians do the other, and then some comedians do both. But are you, do you build every year towards the Edinburgh Fringe Festival?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, you know.
But you do all the clubs and everything too.
Yeah, I do the clubs in between, yeah.
I would imagine.
I guess in terms of new writing, it kind of tends to be focused towards doing Edinburgh Fringe in August. This year, for the first time in 3 years, because of the pandemic, I was back out doing festivals in Australia in like February, March.
Oh, you did the Melbourne?
I didn't do Melbourne. I did the Perth Fringe and the Adelaide Fringe.
February, March. I was in Australia in January doing the Sydney comedy store. I did a couple weeks.
Yeah. So that's kind of right in the middle of summer, isn't it?
Yeah, it was great. It was a real, and I did Melbourne last year, but I just did spots just to kind of see what it was all about for a couple weeks. I had a great time. I wasn't doing it with a full hour, but how was it? How did you enjoy it?
I mean, that's my first time for 3 years, because I was actually out in Adelaide in March of 2020 when just the whole world went mental. I got home, I think, massive days before the UK went into lockdown.
Wow.
You just got stuck in a real Australian lockdown.
Well, do you know what I'm realizing now is there was a guy. So last year, 2022, when I was at Melbourne Festival, there was this guy I was hanging out with. I'm going to forget his name, but he was a Australian comedian. But they had, I guess there's theme shows at these festivals, right? And one of the theme shows was the UK. UK comedians invade Melbourne Festival. And they couldn't get a Scottish comedian because you weren't there.
Yes.
So this guy pretended to be a Scottish person.
Mickey D.
Mickey D. Yes.
Mickey D.
Mickey D is a legend. So for the entire month, he had his own show across town where he was himself. He was Mickey D doing his regular Australian person show. And then when that ended, he would run to the other side of town and put on a fake Scottish accent. And for the whole month, he was pretending to be Scottish, and he never lifted the veil on it. The audience never knew he wasn't Scottish.
And he did different jokes. He did
he was telling me he was writing all material as a Scottish person, and he was like shitting on the crown and stuff, and like saying how dumb Australians were. and like doing all this stuff that he could only get away with because he was Scottish. Was he? So that was because you couldn't make it. He was filling in for you.
Well, none of us could make it. None of us. No one from the
Mickey
UK.
D.
Mickey D. Taking advantage of the situation. I like it. Double
what's
dipping.
What's his full name?
Adolf. No,
I did know Mickey D's full name, but I can't remember now.
Yeah, Mickey D.
He lived in Manchester for years.
He's hilarious.
He's a very funny guy. Yeah,
I ended up hanging out with him a few different nights, and yeah, I'm
Mickey D.
Up.
You got to be funny. That name. He's got to bring it.
So that was because of you. I can't find it anyway. Whatever, yeah. Mickey D.
Yeah, so to get back to the original question, yeah, I usually start kind of getting my Edinburgh show ideas in order around about when I'm out in Australia. I think there's something about being away from home makes you kind of, I think it frees up a lot of the creative side of your brain, I think.
Agreed. Yeah, I do most of my writing on the road because there's none of the little stuff you have to do at home. You know, now I have to do this. Now I have to do the cook food, do the laundry, do this, that, do that. Yeah. So you're just sitting in a hotel room and you can write the entire time. So
train journeys are good.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Vlad, thanks for doing it, man. I think, Kev, did I miss anything?
No, I think we covered it all.
Well, actually, no, we did. Sorry. I had one last thing. So what do you see for the future?
Yeah, that's
with the independence movement.
Oh, right. Well, it's pretty difficult to say right now. We're in a kind of standoff situation. Mm. It all depends what happens in the next UK election, I think, because that's the next big election that's coming up.
If Labour takes over, you think they'll Labour Party takes over UK, they would give you permission?
What could happen is Labour might not win enough to get an overall majority. And that might mean they might have to rely on support from the SNP. And part of that could be conditional on them.
But then wouldn't they then be losing their power? Because in the future, Labour would have less voters, right? If they let go of Scotland or no?
No.
Well, what now? No, not in the moment. I mean, because at the moment, Labour only has, there's only one MP in the UK Parliament. There's only one Labour MP from Scotland.
Oh, okay. So they have no power.
So what you're saying is if Labour doesn't get enough votes, they'll have to make a deal to make a coalition. Part of that coalition could be
the S&P.
With the Scottish Nationalist
Party. The S&P goes independent.
And part of their agreement to join the coalition is we want to have a vote.
Yeah. Yep.
Got it.
And what if Scotland gets independence? My last question, because I'm a loser tennis fan. Because Wimbledon, they've never had an English champion, and then they just pretended Andy Murray was the first English champion ever. He's Scottish. Yeah. That must drive Scottish people crazy. Will they have to redact that and say again, England's never had an English champion, having an English champion like 100 years? Or
well, I also want to ask, do you remember the band Travis? Aren't they Scottish?
Oh, I love Travis. Yep.
Would they still be considered Britpop?
Scott Pop.
I can't be the first person asking this question. It's been burning in my ear, the Travis situation.
I couldn't go to the Travis concert last year. It was my anniversary, so I hope they don't break
it. I didn't even know they had one. I would go.
I would have invited. Yeah, I don't think that would have been. I would have been divorced if I went on my anniversary. So hopefully they do a celebration Scottish Independence tour.
Scotch pop.
First ever Scotch pop tour.
You wouldn't even have to know Travis was Scottish. I mean, because it's obvious from their biggest hit, which was "Why Does It Always Rain on Me?"
Of course, it always rain on me.
Amazing, Vlad McTavish. Thanks for doing the show, man. Everybody,
a lot of fun.
Check him out at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. He has a show called "The End of the Beginning of the End," and we got connected through him with the great Ollie Horn. So Ollie has shows out there too. Yes. Check out Ollie if you're in Edinburgh. Thanks. That's it, man. Vlad, thanks for doing it.
Let me know when you come. If you ever planning coming to Edinburgh, let me know.
Oh my gosh. I would love to. I was supposed to go last summer and we got COVID. So hopefully sometime in the next couple of years. You were awesome. That was a blast, Cap. What should we do?
Yeah. We'll do it again. In the meantime, let's get lost.
Do it again.
Get lost.
Cheers, guys.